You said around about the time of the show you had at the Tate that painting is about use. Could you expand a bit on that?
I mean, it's about something that's usable. I don't think painting is about making a product or an object. I think its objectness is only interesting as it is of use to somebody that might look at it, something that you can get from looking at the thing. So rather than it being about the object, it's about the meaning or the feeling that it transmits.
And it is a case of both meaning and feeling for you?
I don't think you can separate between the two. I mean, they're two different words, but I don't think you can separate between intellect and feeling either. If you do, it's silly, I think. Anyway, I think that it just has to do with making something that can change the possibilities for the viewer, possibility of seeing something else, something that might be completely outside of the painting.
You also say that you make icons. Do you see art at the moment as the kind of activity which could be described perhaps in the way that Kiefer looks at it, as a sort of secular provider of a symbolic order in the face of sort of religious skepticism? For Kiefer, it's most evident in sort of paintings like Resumptio, the palette with wings rising from the ashes of the grave, and in your case perhaps also the painting Resurrection, which is in the Whitechapel show.
I don't really think that paintings are icons. I might have said that a long time ago. Maybe I had been looking at some icons that day. I think that they're iconic in the sense that there is an emblem of something that gets imprinted on your psyche or on you, and in that way, just the nature of it being an emblem of something, mental state or emotionality or a density of information, whatever it be. Only, I don't think it's as parochial as it sounded. Somehow, I think if I think about Kiefer's work, they always look to me to be sort of nationalistic in some way. There seemed to be this slogan-like quality to them, or this... I thought maybe something that seemed to be intrinsic to American art was that it had much more to do with the notion of deconstructing the picture plane and finding a way to invent painting for yourself, or thinking about painting in terms of painting rather than other subject matter. And all of the different subjects that seem to be in my paintings somehow are subordinate to the accumulative resonance that they might have as parts of a painting. And so then what's the point of what I do? I mean, it's certainly not about geography or Neo-Freudian psychology or any of the elements that might have been sources for some of the information that are in the paintings. It seems to be about the density of the disagreement between those things and the irreal qualities of things that seem to be so specific, like looking at a picture of an ethnic type painting where you see a very specific thing, like an ethnic type, a racial catalog, a face of a racial catalog. My initial impulse is to think how absurd that is, that this would be ethnic type number 17, and somebody's, that's going to mean something to someone, but you place it in an arrangement of things, and somehow, whether it be the nature of the material that it's made out of, or the things that it's next to, or how it's done, it seems to deflate the prior meaning somehow and commandeer its original meaning. And then you look at it, and I even though the painting looks like there are very specific literal things in there, and there are, seems like an abstraction. I mean, the feeling or the notion of it, as in as a result of all of the elements in the painting, are an abstraction. It has to do more with feeling about it than being pro or con.
Is iconography then of any relevance when looking at your painting, do you think? The actual study of the images that are there.
I think iconography has to do with the artist's particular use of these different things and their ability to be deconstructed or constructed, to break the painting down. I mean, what is my use of plates? It's not where the plates came from, if they came from the Salvation Army or not. It has to do with our subjective response or our collective response to this particular material, and then that's one of the psychological underpinnings of that. And then painting something on top of it means that the painting, it's not just a painting of a female Christ, it's a painting that's made out of broken plates. And it's not a figure and plates, it's the object is the thing, and you can't really separate the two things. So what you deal with is compression of time or compression of physical and ideational coordinates that make a vision of something. I think the vision is the thing that I'm interested in, the vision of distance, where you can notice yourself observing something rather than the particular images. But if I think about iconography, or what I think a misreading of my work has been, it's that people look at the work vis-a-vis the material, like these are rug pad paintings, or these are velvet paintings, or these are plate paintings. I think that it's all just stuff to me. But the stuff, if you want to look at the iconography of my work, you have to see, how does this velvet make sense in terms of these plate paintings? It's not just for variation. They have different properties as different visual and psychological properties that make them part of a syntax that I think, you know, or how I use brown, how the drawing functions in a painting, how stains function.
With the plate paintings in particular, there's looking at them is a very active thing. I mean, in order to see the paint, you have to stand some considerable distance away in order to really see the images clearly. Uh-huh. They do fracture a lot when you get closer.
Well, I think they look very different up close as they do from far away. You look at a Velasquez painting, it's the same thing. You see a bunch of brush strokes up close, you get back, you see images. When the lights are brighter, there's more reflectiveness in the plates, so the surface is more agitated. When it's darker, the image comes out if there are things that are painted on top of the plates. So many different kinds of appearances to the plate paintings that the function of the plates varies for me from painting to painting. But the way the image gets broken up is something that I find very compelling about those things, and I can't seem to find it in any other way but to make paintings with these dishes on them. Unfortunately, I think that you have to kind of get rid of your preconceptions about looking at things also. I mean, even people that have seen paintings that had plates on them and they had heads, then they saw paintings without any images that they could recognize, say, well, maybe you don't need the plates if you don't have any images. But if the paint is covering all of the plates, it looks like a dried up riverbed or something. If they're exposed, it looks like dappled light. I mean, there are many different things that I can see in there. I see different uses in them. So it varies from one thing to the other. When people say, oh, the plate paintings are, oh, it's another plate painting. I mean, I don't know what they mean, because I think there's great variation in their use. For me,
perhaps I could just carry on just a little bit more about these surfaces that you paint on. and you say that they're just stuff, plates or velvet or tarpaulin or whatever, but as well as having psychological meanings, they also seem to me to have very strong social meanings, which are distinctly polarized. I mean, a tarpaulin that's been used already as a tarpaulin and a piece of pristine velvet are very kind of social and culturally powerful things.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, when I say stuff, I mean, you know, we're made out of stuff also. I think there's an equanimity about that, or there's a Whitman-esque attitude that I have towards all of these materials. I think they're all equal somehow. I don't have hierarchical notions about them. But I do think that they're all life-related, and they're charged because of that. And I'm looking for that matrix of chords that will come out of the selection of materials like that. Because, I mean, I do believe that there's no personal language, just a personal selection of language. So those things are in the world. I mean, the velvet to me looks one, these days it looks like it's something fabricated, so the color is impregnated in immediately. There's a seam in it. It works the way a paneled painting worked for me when I made wax paintings. I needed to prepare the surface when I made the wax paintings to receive an image to give this dissonant time frame to it. In the velvet paintings, immediately I paint something on it, and because the plane of the paint is different than the plane of the velvet, it sits in front of it, or if I don't put any modeling paste on it, it seeps into it, and I have this visual depth of field and a physical one also. I think about the fabricated nature of the velvet. I'm sure, or I've heard in England quite a bit, that people think of it as this plush, kind of pristine or precious material. I think of it in terms of its antiquity, in terms of these chains lying around in the Vatican with velvet curtains and these boxes and all this bad stuff, the Children's Crusade. I mean, a lot of different things. But when I'm working on it, or I really use it because it has a visual property that I can't get in any other way, and I find it interesting to see that kind of shimmer in the color and the iridescence that it has.
You've identified a certain kind of national strain, perhaps, in American art in terms of the deconstructive qualities that it has, and yet you seem to distance yourself from people who, certainly over here, we would regard as being in the forefront of that kind of tradition, people like Sherry Levine or Cindy Sherman. Do you feel any kind of affinity with the sort of work they're doing?
Well, I don't think that their work has to do with this kind of deconstruction. I think their work has to do with quasi-moral questions about originality and about will and about Marxism, or it used to, or like what can you do now and be responsible for? Or how presumptuous do you want to be? I mean, they're reactions to modernism in some way. When I think about American, when I was talking about this deconstructive nature of things, I think there was an attempt to distill painting into an irreducible image. In post-war America, the artists needed to separate themselves somehow from Europe to try and gain their autonomy, or they felt this need. So everybody had a sign, an emblem, Adolf Gottlieb, a big stain, Pollock with this thing, Rothko. They were all signaturizing in some form, even though in many cases, or in Pollock's case, or Rothko, there was a great transcendence of the object that they made. But there was still a need to distill this thing or filter it down, break it down somehow. So if you look at the chronology of objects, then you see somebody like Bryce Marden making the wax paintings and taking all the images out and just covering the surface so you have a support and a surface. For me, when I felt like if I was going to reintroduce the language, I needed to somehow note that I had to begin from the beginning again and build some kind of a painting that was conscious of itself. Whereas I think somebody like Francesco Clemente or Bozalitz, they accepted the notion of a rectangle and they painted images, and their work was much more involved with imagism, where for me it had much more to do with the object being the subject as well as the image. Then Francesco got involved with making things on this paper and Indian paper, cotton, gluing things down and making the frescoes. And I think he was looking for an ethnographic grounding for the images that he was working on. I mean, in going to India or wherever, he was looking for this pastorality and using different kinds of materials gave an exotic quality to the things that he was wearing, or an Eastern quality. And I think that there was the possibility of different things that American people thought couldn't be subject matter anymore, certainly in the Greenbergian sense. And there's a kind of freedom that was allowed, that we gave ourselves. We demanded to have this sort of freedom and just said, okay, we understand what that is. It was a little club with this esoteric dogma for members, and it didn't seem viable in some way. And I think the thing about Kiefer's work that made it interesting is this ethnographicness also, this sort of view. It's all painted on top of the notion of post-World War II Europe, this burnt-out thing, these photographs. They're loaded in some way already. And then what I'm saying is that all of a sudden other things were able to be entertained as part of art, something that could be in a painting that was excluded in America. So it's funny because there seems to have been some sort of melding going on where I just think things are getting clearer. And because if you look at somebody like Polka's work, and Blinky Palermo's work. I mean, Blinky's work was very formal. Polka's work, even though he was using material and then painting things or painting flamingos on top of it, there was a similar distance from the way Blinky would make a blue triangle or he would paint a flamingo on a piece of material, even though they look completely different. And now if somebody saw one of these paintings that he's made, just one of these big stain paintings, if they came from America and they knew about Dan Christensen and Jules Olitsky and these, or Helen Frankenthaler, they would think, oh, these are just kind of modernist, lyrical, abstract, expressionist paintings, and they have nothing to do with that. So it has to do with the confusion of appearances sometimes and context, and there is some sort of clarity on the horizon, I think. I think it's important to get rid of the nationalistic boundaries. I remember showing Sigmar Polka's work to Holly Solomon some years ago, and I thought it would sort of expand the pattern and decoration art that she was showing, because I thought this had these patterns, but it also meant something else. It denied it in some way. It laughed at it. Anyway, she thought it looked too German. And then 5 years later, 4 years later, she showed it. But it was interesting then. I mean, the work was. I mean, her act of doing that wasn't. So, I don't know. It's, I guess I do occupy a peculiar space in America, or a peculiar position. I don't feel like I'm a part of a group there. I don't feel like I'm a part of a group here either. I think artists have their individual notion of what they think the truth is, or their approximation of it, or what their moral obligations are, and then they try to be responsible to them.
The kind of opening up of possibilities that you're talking about then, post-war, you've identified to a certain extent with the work of Boyce. You also, as far as I can understand, say that he's not particularly well known or appreciated in America.
I mean, he didn't have any shows in America. I mean, the first show he had was in 1974 at Rennie Bloch's gallery, where he did this thing with the coyote. It was a decision on his part. Maybe, you know, the president doesn't want to move into the White House. He wants to stay in Kentucky or wherever he's from. So maybe he felt like he could be the best, or he could stay intact, staying in Europe, being a European. I think his work was very moral, and I think it was really, he was very important as a teacher to so many people. people. I mean, I was looking at Polka's... I know Polka's work pretty well. I was looking at this book of watercolors of things of boys, things from 56, I see images. I mean, he covered a lot of ground. But there's something to be said about these things being 5 by 4 inches, or they're just little stains and notes, and it's different once you're making paintings that have similar forms in them. But I mean, at the time, Cy Twombly was drawing very sketchy little drawings in the 50s, and boys was they didn't know each other, and there's this biological need, and there's a social need for something, or for somebody to behave in a particular way, and then it comes up. It's like something that's in the air, something that is necessary. And usually you find this meeting, you meet with this kind of stuff anteriorly. I mean, I never saw any drawings of Joseph Beuys until, I don't know, about 1980. I saw a couple of, maybe 4 drawings in the Kunstmuseum in Basel. Or I saw one in the Studio Marconi in 1978 on a brown paper bag with little... A piece of bone. But I didn't really know what he did. I had a feeling when I saw this, and then later I came to know him, and I met Heiner Bastian, and I started to see these, they sent me these books of drawings, and start seeing these shapes and these things, and you know, there you find brothers where you thought you had none. And I remember I had dinner with him when he was in London for his show, I guess it was last November, and he was saying things, and it was a relief not to feel like I had to say anything. It was such a pleasure to hear him speak. I mean, there was this wisdom, and there was a naivete at the same time, and this immense curiosity for everything. And I think that if you're going to be an artist, you have to be conscious, you have to be moral, you have to be, you know, it is about survival. It's about, if you're going to show work to other people, if it's public, you have to think it's of use.
One of the earlier paintings in the Whitechapel show, the Saint Sebastian, I assume that that's, you identify yourself in that image. Is that, would that be correct?
Well, I wrote Born in 1951 on it. In the title, writing that, yes, maybe I was feeling pretty crummy when I made that, but it's not really me. I think all of the paintings aren't about me. They're just about things that we're all subjected to in some way, or reality that we are faced with, or different compression of things. It's not me being versatile or virtuoso, a painting thing, or a declaration about myself. I think they're more about things that are, that we all recognize, that I'm just pointing to.
Do you look upon painting as an activity which carries optimism with it?
Well, I looked at all these damn objects that are around there. I must be a little bit optimistic. I mean, just the point of getting up and thinking that you can build something, or that you would want to, seems to be optimistic. I think in each one there is a negation that goes on, or there's something that says, well, yeah, okay. It's not like an elastic clause that says that I'm not responsible. It's like, yes, all beautiful roses will wilt, but they're still beautiful, and that's just the nature of things. I guess, I hate to say it, I mean, but I guess it seems like they're very optimistic, and in order to make all that stuff, you must think it sounds more of a positive act than a negative one.
That sense of responsibility that you're talking about does connect with a belief in posterity in some sense. I mean, I'm thinking about the way you say that you can get to a point where you feel satisfied about accepting yourself as a dead person.
I mean, I think that some of the people that I'm communicating to aren't alive yet. I mean, I'm certainly making the paintings for my kids, and one of them's only 6 weeks old, so he doesn't really understand what it is yet, but hopefully I will be able to teach him something through that, and maybe he'll just think it's a bunch of junk, or he won't like it, or won't make any sense. But hopefully, that way might, you know, it's a slow way of communicating, but I think there's actually a chance of transgressing death in that way. I mean, I will be dead, but somehow the meaning of what I intended or what I cared about might be of use to somebody else. I feel that Boyce's work has been of use to people that are still alive, and he's transgressing death in that way. I mean, his work is certainly Picasso's case, or anything that, I guess, any artist that can make a clear assessment of that particular quality of life, you know, whatever, so many different kinds. It's just a matter of a quality or a level of quality about this, or the clarity of this recognition. That's all. I just think it's about being conscious, basically.
You talked in this interview, in fact, a little bit about how your work, the function of it, can transcend your death and so on. And I just wondered if you just could talk a little bit about your attitude toward mortality and so on. And I was thinking of the portrait of God that you've got in the exhibition. Right. I mean, what gave rise to that particular painting?
Well, the painting I did just before it. I mean, it's a five-part painting. I saw that shape on there. Susie Gablick wrote in New Criterion or something, how could a blue florid blob be a portrait of God? And the title of her article was Julian Schnabel Paints a Portrait of God. Now, that's my title, not hers. Anyway, all I wanted to say is that the reason I named it that is that there was a story that I liked about a little boy named Jimmy, and his mother said, Jimmy, what are you doing? He said, I'm drawing a portrait of God. She said, now, Jimmy, nobody knows what God looks like. And he said, now they do. So it's just a matter of naming something that I don't see any reason why a blue florid blob couldn't be a portrait of God. I don't know what God looks like.
Is there any work going on in Britain, any British artists that you particularly find of interest?
I really don't know much about it. But I think that there's some good artists here. Hopefully, I think it's very difficult to live in this country and work. There's an incredible level of repression here and a lot of very uptight people. And there's an extraordinary, excruciatingly boring battle between the visual and the literal, and the literary for some peculiar reason. It's like a tradition of bad faith from Evelyn Waugh and George Bernard Shaw to some people that aren't worth mentioning. That, yeah, I think there's some good artists here. I think Bill Woodrow is a good artist, and I mean, I don't really know his work. Bruce McLean, I think, is a good artist. I think they're, yeah, Gilbert and George. I think George is a wonderful poet. I think his Gothic poetry, the text of their film, is quite brilliant, horrifying and touching and very desolate. And there's a lot to buck up against in this country. Class system. Anyway, it was very nice to have this show here now, because I think that people will get a chance to see what my work looks like. And they won't just be pissed off that there's some young American successful kid who had this show at the Tate that was hardly a show. I mean, it was just two crowded rooms and a TV guide. Anyway.
Yeah, right. I mean, just finally, looking at the show at the Whitechapel, I mean, seeing all your work together in that way, in that space, which, as you know, has been refurbished, how do you feel about it? Because you can stand back. Presumably.
Well, I'm very happy about it. I think that it looks like my work to me. And I think that it's a privilege to be able to show the paintings there. I think it ought to straighten some people out, straighten things out, and I think that people could come and see it. Maybe it'll be of use to some young painters here or other people. I just think that it's great that there's somebody like Nick around who would do it. And anyway, it seems like there's a lot of interest. The questions certainly are getting better. Thanks.
Thanks very much. Bruce, we're in your exhibition at the Anthony Doffey Gallery, and it's called The Floor, The Fence, The Fireplace.
Yeah.
Before we actually talk about specific works, I've mentioned that you're on an audio arts tape with Julian Schnabel, and there was just one thing that he mentioned that I was quite interested in raising with you, and that is that he said that his work was about function and about use rather than about the product or the object, and I thought that the idea of function and use is something that might be relevant to start talking about in relation to the objects you've got here.
Well, function is something which has interested me ever since I first made anything, and I think that the problems have been for what is called art in the latter part of the 20th century is that a lot of artists don't seem to understand that art has a function and isn't just and it is functional, has a particular kind of function. I mean, I've always thought that, and all the work that I've ever made has had a particular function. Early sculptures, which were sculptures which questioned the nature of sculpture, because that's what we were taught at St. Martin's, was to question the nature of sculpture. So I made a lot of sculptures which did question what sculpture was and what it could be, and also made propositions for what it was, because I was questioning what it had been. That had a function too. And then I made a lot of critical works and other areas of art activity, like criticism on subject matter and academic approaches to subject matter. So that was functional as well. And the pose had a function. The pose was to try to make work in a different kind of a context.
I mean, the works that you've got in this exhibition, in fact, very consciously refer back to the work that we know you very well for, that is the performance works, yeah. Such as Nice Style, the Masterwork, and so on. They seem to have a reference to bodily positioning and so on. But, sure. But it's manifest in a physical object, such as a fireplace with a platform that people can lean against.
Yeah. I just thought there's a lot of work being made now which refers to domestic items, like a kind of, it's like a relook at pop art, if you like. And there's a lot of new sculpture which uses recycled washing machines, plastic bags, dustbins, galvanized buckets, and all sorts of things, you know, to try to make something presumably meaningful out of this stuff, to try to make some comment. But it seems to me that is only kind of an illustration of an idea. And why not artists actually make the very things that they are making things with? So if you're going to use a coat hanger, or I shouldn't use that, I keep on, looks like I'm referring to Richard Wentworth, but if you use a hair dryer in a work, why not actually make the hair dryer? So really, I had this stupid idea to begin with, as a sort of a joke, was to make a lot of sculpture, like fireplaces, which were functional objects, like places for fire, that some of the fourth and fifth generation sculptors could take away, cut up, and make into giraffes, or things like that. Now, I'm sort of joking there, but really what I'm saying is that it seemed to me that if you look at what goes on in the world and how artists behave and how artists conduct themselves, a lot of the artists spend quite a considerable amount of time working on the houses and not spending too much time on the work. So consequently, perhaps the work is the house and not the thing which they're actually supposed to be doing, which is the painting or the conceptual piece. But it seemed to me, why not accept, own up, and say, look, I'm more interested in the house than I am in a painting of a warship, which people misread and think refers to the Belgrano incident or something, when it's actually to do with a piece of cheese. It seemed to me an idea to make, to actually own up and say, look, I'm going to make a fireplace and or a place for a fire, and I'm going to make a table for a seat or a screen for a smoke. And these things can be put back and used by people, posed with or positioned by. I mean, after all, I mean, they are quite decorative, and a lot of art now is extremely decorative.
So in other words, I mean, the objects are to be located within a kind of social context. You're actually doing
them. Well, I think it's very important, because, you see, the thing is that what I think is very tricky now is a situation where there's a lot of discussion about the Clore Gallery, or is Mönchengladbach better, or is the Stadus Music Gallery and whatever any better? Is this better than that architecturally? Is this better than that? And some of these buildings I like very much, particularly like the one in Mönchengladbach. A lot of people don't like that. I think it's a fantastic space. And I like it very much. Some people say it's a fantastic space, but it's not any good to look at works in. And that buildings should be built to respond to the works. Well, I think this is wrong. I mean, I don't understand why they have to build museums to put works in. The work should demand the only space that work can go in. And that work has to demand its space. And the artist has to make demands as well, has to make a space for the work. And the work, I believe, has to be part of society.
That, I mean, that comes very much back to the idea of the function of the work.
Absolutely.
The function is to place it in relation to a circumstance where there will be individuals that will relate to it
yeah.
and actually be modified and altered because of
that's
that,
right.
that juxtaposition. The other factor in the works, as far as I'm concerned, is a very strong architectural sense. You know, they're not objects in the sense that, you know, an object on a plinth might be. They seem to relate much more to a physical space and a physical scale, that is.
It just seems now necessary to shift the work into another dimension, and the dimension has to be one where people can... It's to do with... The work is about me and society and other people and me. It's not just about me and this and that. It has to be positioned back in there, like it has to be part of the situation. So that's, in a sense, the idea to say, well, let's make a table, let's make a jug, let's make a... Let's make the fireplace. It is a place to meet. It has a function. You can lean, you can pose, you can gesture, you can make different kind of fireplaces for different social stratas of society. You can have low-level ones, high-level ones, any kind of ones. You can make them as many times as you want. I think we have to break down a lot of these kind of myths about what art is and what art isn't and what the rules are about what it should be and what it shouldn't be. So just by continuing to try to break the rules, you get a lot of flack saying you're jumping on bandwagons. But, I mean, I think everyone should jump on bloody bandwagons.
We were talking about function, and you were talking about the function of the works really is to do with the real world and not to do with any kind of isolation and separation from people's everyday experience, which yeah. I think is an interesting idea, that you conceive of them as going back into some sort of social context. But there was one point I just wanted to pick up, which was the idea that inherent within them there is nevertheless a sort of a criticism or a critical idea about people's behaviour, about positioning and social posturing and artificial attitudes that exist also in the real world. So I was wondering, you know, you were talking earlier about people spending more time doing up their own houses or carefully positioning themselves in a social sense. So, I mean, is there anything there that you were thinking of when you were making those works? Because this goes back in a way to Nystyle, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I was thinking about these things, but as well, I mean, you see, the thing is that it's like people who don't know what I do, and I've known you know what I, you know, I've known you for 20 years, neither, but you know what I do and what I've been doing, so you can actually make these jumps forward and back and around because you have seen the work change, and it's developing. It's not actually, it's quite a logical development because you can see that it's coming from these concerns, and it's concerns of architecture and of actual manipulation of people by spatial constraints, and how, you know, the museum does determine how you view the work and how you respond to the work. So I'm suggesting, and social housing and all these problems affect how people behave and how people don't want to look at work. I mean, the problem with making interviews is that I'm jumping around in my head quite swiftly, and there's no connections that have to be made by other people or by you. I can't. It all seems perfectly clear to me, you know, but to actually talk about it in a kind of like a linear way isn't clear, because I don't think in a linear, thinking like backwards and forwards and around and the side. Everything you do is a combination of everything else, you know.
Well, let's just address our kind of conversation a bit to that particular issue for the moment.
Which one was that again?
Let's talk about that whole area of your practice, which in a sense one could describe it as jumping around. I mean, I can see a kind of a central thread of concerns going through it. But I mean, to someone that wasn't that familiar with your work could be quite surprised that one minute you're making a very heavy stone sculpture, the next minute you're painting, the next minute you're making performance, next minute ceramics, then books. I mean, presumably your sort of background in sculpture and performance and conceptual art to some extent gives you the freedom to move across these areas and these boundaries.
Yeah, well, right, but I mean, don't you think that the reason to be an artist or the reason to be a sculptor or the reason to be in the situation that you put yourself in is so you can do anything you want to?
Right, well, I think what we should do now, Bruce, is actually walk round the exhibition.
And all right.
You could talk about the pieces.
Fine.
Right, Bruce, well, we're back in the gallery now, yeah. So let's have a look at the works. If I could just stand here. Well, should we walk into the main gallery here? Well, let's talk about this piece, which is... Perhaps we should describe it for the benefit of those listening.
Yeah.
It's essentially a fireplace, but
It's actually a place for a fire. I called it that. It's a fireplace, but it is actually, the title is quite crucial to the reading of the work. It is a place for a fire, and it actually is and will function as a fireplace. It does, in fact. And the idea, of course, about the work is that the fireplace in houses is a source of energy and heat, and people do gravitate towards this, and they take up their relative positions. I'm taking up a position at the lower end of the mantelpiece, yeah, being slightly smaller than you wish.
So you're leaning on the
mantle.
What is in fact
on the piece for a mantle?
The mantelpiece.
A mantelpiece, yes.
Which is set at an angle
of approximately 13 degrees.
Upon what is what? A metal iron panel, or an iron panel about
it's 9 foot
by 6 foot.
Yeah, sheets of steel. Yeah, modern steel.
Right. Now onto this, you've actually welded what are familiar motifs almost in your work. That is the wedge face and the fingers and the hands and a cross. I mean, this is something that actually occurs really throughout the exhibition, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, these signs and symbols are, the hand is like the hand, if you like. I mean, I don't want to read into what it means and what it doesn't mean, but I think if you see a lot of work over a period of time, you understand them. And the significance of these signs and symbols. I used to make images about which were like the scone, the shoe, the fireplace, the jug, you know. Mm. I'm interested in building up a language of the same few basic symbols, really.
Right. And this piece is actually going to be installed in a house.
Yeah. Tom's
so
home, yeah.
The grate we see down there, it will be...
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Mm. Sure.
Right.
It's a functional object, yeah.
Okay. Well, this one now, which... in a sense reminds me of a sort of a drinks cabinet, again with your motifs or your symbols, but this time they're kind of produced in wrought iron.
Well, it's just mild steel bent. It's just, I'm just still drawing with a pencil, just drawing with steel, and the idea was to kind of make a drinks cabinet you could open and shut, and you could put in your home and you could tell me to pause it. You know what I mean? Gin and tonic? Or, obviously, in this thing, you'd have something which was colour-coordinated, as they say. It wouldn't be simply... as was suggested, I put some red, yellow and blue drinks in here. And I'd have some, perhaps, Perrier water in here. Mm. I'd have some Tizer in here. But the whole thing is to do with... like, if you have an object in your house, and you the whole thing about having a drink is that the pausing and the whole gesturing and the whole... kind of ceremony and the whole kind of ritual of having a drink. Oh, I have some. You know, I'm obsessed with drinking and that's the thing. You have all these really functional doors, which this is a Liberace door, which opens here, you see?
This opens, right.
And you can the idea is that the actual object modifies your kind of behaviour as you go around it, you know.
And now we're looking at a much longer piece. What's the title of this piece?
It's another place for a fire. It's this horizontal version. And the thing is, it's like, you know, I put this very, very long mantelpiece on, so you can actually, you can perhaps take a position. Do you want to walk over there? You could perhaps walk over there and take a look in a position. And it gives you a distinction device. You can actually, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We can meet up by the fire. And we can take about a difference of the positions.
So you intend these works to be
lent
actually
on.
Used?
Oh, absolutely! They've got to be used.
They provide a framework for behaviour of one sort or another.
They should be used physically, lent upon. I mean, I don't. This kind of nonsense of people don't touch this and don't touch that. What does that actually mean? Notice you make a beautiful white painting, which is about white. You don't want people to grab their fingerprints on it, but. If you make a thing which is a fireplace, and people will put their beer on it, put a vase on it, put their elbow on it, sit on it, lean on it, you know, it's good. It feels good. It makes you want to lean on it. You can get behind it and view the wall and the fence behind it as being bare. It's wonderful. You know what I mean? I mean, I like the fact people have been walking in this, and nobody says, don't touch it.
Do you want to just describe it, what we're on?
This is a terrazzo, black terrazzo circular dance floor for domestic use. It's a very, not a very big floor, it's a six feet in diameter, which is wonderful. We can walk it, we're walking on it now, and we can dance on it. You could probably more intimate sense situation, get four or five people dancing on it, and get a bit of tap dancing on it, and you could be actually installed in your garden, or in your, or, you know, it's another possibility.
So in a way, the all of the works should be seen and returned to domestic or social environments,
yeah,
and be part and parcel of a way of life.
I hope so. Thank you. I hope so. I hope so. I agree with you. I hope so. There's nothing else I can say. Do you think? Is there anything else I can say?
No. So, how do you want to finish this tape?
I don't know, really. I thought you just finished it.